This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Marina Sirtis, Deanna Troi from Star Trek The Next Generation. You're listening to Trek FM.
Theo Greyhawk.
Welcome, listeners, to another cup of Earl Grey. I'm your host, Joe Keegan, and as usual, joined with me today is the Amy Nelson.
The Amy Nelson, wow.
The Amy Nelson. I know if there was ever an adjective to describe Amy, it's the one and only Amy Nelson.
Hi, Joe.
How are you today?
Doing good. Still by myself. All by myself.
By myself. I love how we sing that in two different keys with two different time signatures. Oh, that's funny. I'm glad we're not employed as singers because it would be terrible. Things are still the same here. It's very, very strange.
And you're on vacation, spring break.
Couldn't say vacation because it implies that I'm going away somewhere. The furthest I've been is like 2 miles away to walk the dogs.
Yeah. So. You know what popped up in my Facebook feed? You know how they do? Look back on the years. And a year ago this week, I was in New York City visiting the city and visiting with my awesome, lovely friend Chris Littlefield and Laz Marquez and Patrick Devlin, all my Trek buddies. I know. Good times. And I love having Trek friends around the world. It's great.
And you've got some in Scotland now, so you can, when this is all over, you can come and visit.
Oh, I will be.
But you know what? We'll go back to those days again in the future.
Yes.
When we can all meet up and have fun together and stay up far too late for our age.
That's the truth.
Did you hear that San Diego Comic-Con had officially been cancelled, and that is the week before STLV?
Yeah, it's 2 weeks, and it got cancelled. Yeah.
Oh, is it 2 weeks? Okay.
I don't know how I feel about it, so I'm worried that STLV is not going to happen. This is my first time worrying. Everyone's like, oh, it's not going to happen. I said, yes, it is. It's in August, but with SDCC being canceled, I don't know.
Do you know what? See if it does get canceled. Say proper canceled and they say, we'll just do it August 2021. We'll just have to make sure it's the best convention we've ever had because we won't have seen all our Star Trek friends for 2 years. So we'll raise the roof off the rail properly.
Well, and I'm hoping to come out to, you know, Star Trek Destination, but that's in
November
this year.
Yes. It's usually October, but they moved it to November and they moved it to London.
So I'm hoping by November things are going to be okay.
I honestly don't know. I think we're in this for the long haul.
Well, and it sounds like that it's going to come in waves, you know, so it may get better for the summer and then it might start up again. I mean, I don't know. There's so many theories going around, but it's sad because I love to travel it's been killing me.
Yeah, I know how much you love to travel. Just look at who's when Amy's been on Earl Grey and like there's big chunks of Amy-less episodes. Anyway, can I pick a bone with you, please?
Yes.
It's not really to do with you. It's more to do with that silly website that you used last time to get those American phrases from. I Googled bought the farm. And it does mean to die.
Oh.
And you said, oh no, it's to move out of town and buy a farm. No, it doesn't. That's nonsense. nonsense, I tell you.
Okay, well, I will blame that on the the website. You know, and I guess I have heard that.
Okay, we have some Babel Conference feedback from Earl Grey 320 when we were talking about birthright with our friend Pierre LaRocco. Amy, I'm going to take it away, if that's okay. JJ Becker says, great episode. It occurred to me while listening that there might be some comparisons to be drawn between Soong hiding clues to self-discovery within Data's dreams and the clues in Soji's dreams that helped lead her home. Thank you for your comment, JJ. You might very well be right. You know, if you've listened to Earl Grey ever recently, you know that I'm not the biggest fan of Picard. So, Amy, what do you think about this link between Soji's dreams and Data's dreams?
No, I think it's a really nice tie-in, because when Data, you know, was activated and he, like, stole the Enterprise to go back home in Brothers, you know, that was sort of that sub-program that Soong wrote. And this dream sequence is another sub-program that Soong wrote. So I like that tie-in to Picard with Soji and with Dodge. And think about, Dodge had this underlying feeling that she could trust Picard. Like, that had to have been, you know, the sub-program that Soong wrote. And we know, obviously, from Next Gen that he likes writing these sub-programs. So I really appreciate the tie-in. Thanks, JJ. Well, we have Jason Myers, who writes in, I believe that if one puts stock into their dreams, your subconscious will put / find more meaning into the dreams. If you, like me, think dreams are random neurons firing, then you probably don't even remember them. So I happen to agree. I think because maybe this is a chicken and an egg type of thing. Like, you know, do you put stock in your dreams and therefore you remember them and they have meaning? Or do your dreams have meaning, therefore you put stock into them and you remember them? I don't know. Interesting thought there.
That is, because I've found that if I'm interested in something, then I'm more likely to remember about it. So, case in point, Star Trek. I remember the most meaningless little tidbits of information from Star Trek that is no use to anybody. But when it comes to kind of educational and pedagogical theories, I'm like, totally bores the living daylights out of me. So I don't remember a word of it. Yeah, if you believe something, you're more likely to remember it. And if you believe in the power of dreams, you're more likely to remember them. That's an interesting point. Well, you and I both kind of agreed that we had a similar feeling about dreams, that they kind of helped us in some way.
And yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, one way for your brain to comprehend and sort of download, but it's a way to sort of think through problems or situations that maybe you might have, you know, in random. Yeah.
Yes. Wake up and get a divorce, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Check, done that.
Cool. Okay, Michael Bentley says, a very thoughtful discussion, especially about Worf's character and the idealization of Klingon culture, which, as you said, is developed further in DS9, where eventually learns to relax just a little. But also the way he helped the Klingons to value their lost traditions and their pride as a people. Joe, your Klingon singing was amazing.
It was. There were a lot of comments, and it was very beautiful, Joe.
I've never heard my singing being described as beautiful before, so that means a lot. It helped that I was playing the video alongside through my headphones. It wasn't from memory.
Oh, the curtain has been pulled back. Okay.
It's parrot fashion. Yeah, exactly.
No, it was really good. And thank you for listening to the end. Hashtag still listening. Yeah.
Indeed.
So we have Vera Bible. Hi, Vera. Says, Joe Keegan, you did a great job with the American slang quiz. I'm an American who has been living in London for a few years and still want to call trousers pants. Amy Nelson, I definitely agree with you about not being able to work without my place being clean. I can't concentrate in a dirty apartment. This was an enjoyable episode, and it will definitely give me more to think about on my next rewatch. Well, Vera, thank you so much for your comment. And yeah, I would have a hard time calling pants trousers, for sure.
It's that kind of strange thing. I suppose you being American, you're not exposed to British TV so much. But me being let's call myself British for the moment, we're exposed to American TV. So all the phrases like the yard, the faucet, pants, we kind of intuitively know how to translate them and know what they mean. But if you watch some British TV, you'd be like, what are they saying? What does that mean? Kind of thing. I did not know Vera Bible lived in London.
No, I didn't either.
Does she? I wonder if she goes to Destination Star
Vera,
Trek.
Vera, we will have to get together.
We will, and have a drink at the bar. Nice. Okay. Joshua DeVries says, all right, so for all of you trapped in quarantine, watch the 80s version of V. There was a remake that I think Sci-Fi Channel did in the early 2000s, starring Marina Baccarin, which I can't help but say Macarena Baccarina. That's what we call her in our household. Because it's funny. Anyway, Marina Baccarin, which was okay, but the original version is better. It was a big deal when it first came out, but it's sort of drifted into cult status in the years since then. But it's fun. It is. It's amazing. My mum and dad used to let us stay up really late. I think it was on a Sunday night, about 11 o'clock. And it was in the 80s, so I was barely 10 years old, and they used to let us stay up and watch it.
All right. Well, another vote for V. I'll put it on my list. We'll see if it gets done.
So today, listeners, we're going to continue our series on deleted scenes, this time with season 6, if we can get through it, because there are literally not hundreds, but I want to say hundreds, because I was watching them for a good long while.
There's at least 47.
At least 47, yes, indeed. So we're going to start off with Time's Arrow Part 2. Which was episode one.
Episode one.
In season six. Yeah. That's right, of course. And this is scenes 10 and 11. Back in the 19th century San Francisco, Beverly tries to cope with ancient medicine and ancient attitudes. Her shipmates are increasingly concerned about the mysterious invaders. So there's a couple of wee bits in this, Amy. What did you think of both of them?
Well, it was interesting, as the little synopsis says, like ancient attitudes, because Beverly Crusher was trying to help. Well, maybe we could try this. And the doctor's like, nurse, just do what I say. This man is not worth saving. And oh my gosh, just how he displaced her and didn't even consider her recommendations was shocking, but very of the time.
Because, yeah, she was a woman and therefore a nurse. Yes. And he was a man and therefore a doctor. Yeah. And it's just that gender stereotype, which we still fight with today.
Yeah.
Look at the problem with STEM in schools and trying to get girls to still choose STEM subjects. Yeah. It's an uphill battle some of the times. Yeah, he obviously didn't know that she was chief of Starfleet Medical for a year.
Obviously not.
Seriously. And she had made a good suggestion. Have you tried, what was it, an alkaline saline solution?
Yeah.
Clearly that would have helped him. Probably saved his life.
Yeah, probably. But he was out. He's too far gone. We're not even going to try. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh.
Do you know what? For all its sexism that was implied by the scene, I think I'd still keep it in that little bit.
Yeah, I think so too. And then it went into where they were talking to another patient. It was Troy and Jordy. And the patient was saying, the doctors don't care that we are in pain. And I thought that needed to be in there as well, because it sort of gives the idea that these doctors really have no idea what's going on.
Exactly. And I think that one patient was talking about the doctor that came in and only saw one patient. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure if that was the Davidian doctors, or like the doctors are so busy, they just came in and saw one patient.
Yeah, I thought it was the Davidian doctor, and that another clue to the Davidians,
And then there was a little tiny, kind of pointless bit between Riker and Picard, where Riker is the police officer, and Picard walks up to him out in the street and says, Picard says, is this permanent? And Riker says, yeah, the entrance is just around the corner. Some words to that effect. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know why that was even...
Yeah, it sounded like he was trying to keep the facade up that he was a police officer helping someone to find their way. And it's like, well, there it is around the corner. And then...
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I would have cut that for sure. But I would have kept in the scene with Beverly and Troy and Jordy.
Yes, definitely. I agree with you there. Cool. That's decided then. We will email Paramount immediately, or CBS, or whoever now owns it. Yeah. So the next episode was episode 4, Relics, where we see James Doohan back reprising the role of Scotty. Amy, do you want to tell us what this little deleted scene was about?
Yeah, Scotty feels sorry for himself because he doesn't fit in the world of the 24th century, and Troy tries to help, but only manages to make things worse. Which I think is a very bad description, because watching the deleted scene, I would totally have kept this in. I mean, because she goes in to Scotty's quarters to say, you know, well, how can I help you? And I think there is a great dialogue between them. And she asks him, well, how do you feel? And he's like, how do I feel? And she's like, well, are you bewildered, confused? You know, it's got to be difficult, you know, coming into this time. And what I like about it is that Troy did the exact same thing with the frozen people in the neutral zone, because she helped that lady find her progenitors, the ones that come after her. And, you know, it was a success, because the lady, you know, found her great, 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 whatever, grandson. And so I think there was definite, some really good counseling going on here. And, you know, Scotty was just like, oh, so you're a psychologist, and totally dismisses her. And I also like the fact that we get that counselors have been put on starships for the past 40 years, and sort of the reason behind it and why it's necessary. And so I would, of course, keep this scene in.
I would too. I like Troy here. I think it would have been better if he got back to his quarters and he was so frustrated that he broke a table and then Troy arrived. That would have made it perfect.
Cue Troy, yes.
Exactly. But nevertheless, she still arrives even though a table hasn't been broken. I find it really, really strange that I know James Doohan was Canadian playing a Scottish guy in an American TV show, but having a Scottish guy would never say diapers. Yes, you might argue that the English language has evolved in the 24th century, that's just the word that everybody uses. American English became the default kind of universal English, but a Scottish guy saying diapers, it's nappies.
Oh.
Babies wear nappies, okay. Not diapers.
Okay.
So I'm just putting that out there. But the way he says it, and is weirdly fake, kind of
diapers.
Yeah, I'm so used to it. It's authentic now, accent. Diapers. Yes, I don't also know how to describe Troy's hair. I like her season 6 hair, but I don't know how to describe it. It's like a tied back perm.
Yes.
That's become a mullet, almost. It's very beautiful,
it
yes.
Is.
And I'm assuming that's a wig.
Yes. Yeah, hairpiece.
Okay. Yeah, so that's quite a long extended scene that we get, that discussion between them.
Yeah.
And I don't quite, she's very good doing her counselling thing that she does. Yes. But I don't quite get the fact that Scotty was a captain at this point.
Yeah.
So surely he understands the requirement for some kind of counselling.
Well, but back in the day, they just didn't even, you know, want to consider mental health. And so I like this addition because, you know, she explains, you know, that Starfleet recognized there's issues going on being, you know, on these away missions for extended time, that you need to, you know, discuss your mental health. And so therefore we have a need of counselors.
Yeah, I still don't think it would have taken them, like Starfleet, that long to put counselors on board. Look at nowadays, like astronauts go through so much kind of psychometric testing and analysis and fitness training that to make sure that they're actually ready for the rigors of going into outer space. So I think to wait, 200 and something years before we put counselors on a ship seems a bit far-fetched. Yeah. But anyways, yes, I would agree with you. I would keep this in because I quite like this little scene.
Yes. And any scene with Troy is a good scene.
Of course, I know. We know how you're going to vote this way. So we're going to jump to the next one, which is episode 6, True Q, where we see Olivia Dabo play Amanda Rogers, who turns out is another Q. It's scene 10, deleted. The one Amanda is frightened that others will discover her newfound powers, but she clings to her dream of a normal life and a career in Starfleet. Also, she loves puppies.
And this one, so Deanna is coming back again. This is why people say that Deanna Troi doesn't do anything, because all of her scenes are cut.
You might be right.
Yeah. So she comes in with this adorable, cute little puppy. to try and not only cheer Amanda up, but to give her another, you know, job to do on the Enterprise. But what I loved about this is that Amanda goes through all of her, like, what could she do, the possibilities and hopes and dreams that she has. Well, maybe I want to be a doctor. Well, maybe I want to be an engineer. And she just goes through all these things. Well, maybe I'll go into agriculture and start a farm. And, you know, and it just reminded me of all my students who have the rest of their lives ahead of them, and that they want to, they can do anything. The world is their oyster. And we get that with Amanda in this scene.
Yes. I'm keeping this purely for Henry.
Oh, I know.
Henry was that adorable puppy. So anytime there's a dog, I'm going to love it anyway. So this gets to stay just purely for that reason. Yeah, I don't know. I'm very different to Amanda. Obviously, I'm not a Q, but I had very kind of set goals as a youngster, like very young, kind of your elementary school. Mm-hmm. Like I knew I wanted to go and study physics without really knowing what physics was. Mm. I loved sciences and I loved astronomy, so I knew that was the way forward. Teaching didn't come into it until much later, but I knew I wanted to be some kind of scientist.
Wow.
So yeah, it was never a case of I could go and do this or that. There was a question about me doing music at some point, but that's more of a hobby than a career choice. Mm-hmm. I suppose that's a testament to the future and the possibilities that are available.
Yeah.
If you're a good student.
Yeah. Yeah, I would keep this scene just for that, because the hope and the aspirations that she has, and that she realizes that she can do anything. And Troy agrees, you can do anything.
Yeah. Yeah. But I can do anything better than you. So. Oh, dear. Okay. So the next episode is episode 12, Ship in a Bottle. And this is scene 3 that was deleted, or part of scene 3. Amy, what was this about?
Yeah, so Barclay is in the holodeck talking to Moriarty and realizes that he actually has some discomfort when he gets taken offline. And I watched this scene, and I had to watch it twice because I thought this synopsis for that deleted scene, I wouldn't have picked up on that, because he does a little twitch. Like when he tries to take him off the first time and he twitches and then he's like, well, yeah. I'll talk to Captain Picard, and then shuts him off. But I don't know if we really needed that, because I didn't get that he was in pain.
I got the twitch, but it was sort of like you. I had to watch it twice because it was so brief that didn't really add anything. What I didn't get was Barclay's surprise.
Yeah.
Barclay didn't act surprised in any way whatsoever.
Yeah.
Barclay just, I don't know, he just reacted like it was information. And
yeah.
So maybe if Barclay had made more of it, it's like, you felt discomfort, your light and force fields, how could you possibly feel discomfort? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think we had agreed to delete this, but it doesn't.
Yeah, and then the next scene was scene 8, where they're talking specifically with Picard, and Moriarty wants to, you know, definitely get this physical existence. But the Enterprise crew doesn't know yet what lengths he will go to leave the holodeck. And I didn't really know if I would keep this in. It seemed like the only thing that we got was that he's at 221 Baker Street. And that, I don't know, it seemed like it would be fine to keep deleted.
I think we know that anyway, because 221B Baker Street is a famous address in London. And if you go to London, you might go and visit the home, or the fictional home, of Sherlock Holmes. So if you're a Sherlock Holmes fan, you know that. One thing I did think was interesting was something that Data says. Barclay says something before this, and it says, we have encountered species before that something something. And I've watched it twice, and I don't know what he says there. He kind of mumbles something, and I didn't pick up on those words. So
yeah,
I was
like we've experienced a different type of alien, and that they...
And they can do what we're trying to do. I took that from it. But then Data, I think this is maybe a wise decision to delete it for what Data says. He says, your consciousness is computer generated and isn't something like capable of manipulating physical matter in the way that you want it to do. And I'm thinking, isn't Data's consciousness computer generated?
Exactly, right.
But he can do everything that he says Moriarty can.
Yeah.
So it seems a bit hypocritical.
Yeah. So I think we're agreed this needs to stay deleted.
Stay deleted, but kind of interesting. I'm kind of glad it is a deleted scene.
Yeah.
And I got to see it. Interesting. So that was Ship in a Bottle.
Yeah.
So we're deleting both of those scenes.
Yes.
Okay, good. Glad we're agreed. Let's move on to episode 14, which is one of my favourite episodes of Star Trek.
Absolutely.
And that is Face of the Enemy. Purely for Troy.
Yes.
Because she's phenomenal in it.
She is. She goes undercover as a Romulan Tal Shiar and just crushes this episode. I love it.
Mm-hmm. She does. So in this is scene 10, and Dsev.
Yeah, because he informs the Enterprise crew.
Yes. He is the human guy that defects to Romulus, then is coming back to the Federation. So he's the former Romulan defector, now realizes the Federation is no longer home to him. In his quarters, he realizes that he's more alone than he's ever been. And it's just a really, really short scene before Captain Picard comes in the normal part of the episode. And we learn that Vorchak is the Romulan word for coffee. And all he has to do is ask for coffee.
Yeah.
And it gives him a cup of coffee. Clearly, these replicators were not programmed by Starbucks. Because if I go into Starbucks and ask for coffee, they're going to say, like, what kind of coffee do you want? Do you want a latte? Do you want a cappuccino? Do you want an Americano? Do you want
espresso?
A frappuccino? Yes. Something, something, something. And then there's going to be a million other options. Size, small, medium, large, extra large, venti.
What type of milk? Yes.
Milk, soy, almond, semi. Yeah. Do you want whipped cream? Do you want chocolate sprinkles? Would you like it with a straw? Do you want it to stay or to go? Would you like a bear claw or some other sweet treat to go with it? Would you like a toasted panini sandwich with it?
Yes.
All for $25.95. So yeah, just really simple. Just a coffee.
So this scene, the only notes that I have is that when he asks for, what was the Romulan word?
Vorchak.
Vorchak. The computer voice is some guy speaking.
Oh, in the background, yeah.
Yes. I thought that was so funny when he was trying to order that. And then he's like, okay, just give me coffee. Yeah. We did not need this scene.
No, not at all. It's the deleted scenes just highlight how much additional work goes into having a final episode that looks amazing with all the sound effects.
And sounds amazing, and, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Because it's really obvious when you're watching the deleted scenes. It goes from the normal episode and then into the deleted scene and it looks completely different.
It's all grayed out
Yeah, and it's just really washed out. Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, and you don't have the sound effects and it wasn't Majel Barrett's computer voice. So
exactly. And you have the woman screaming when she goes up to the replicator in sick bay. Oh, I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
So let's move on with episode 15, and that is Tapestry. I like Tapestry now. I never kind of got it the first time.
Oh, I really love weird. Tapestry. I love those what-if scenarios.
And this is a brilliant what-if scenario because it really highlights what happens if Picard's kind of past has changed in any way. So the first scene that we're going to talk about is scene 7. Picard finds it hard to believe that he's really dead. Q does what he can do to convince him otherwise. Amy, what are we thinking about this bit?
I really liked this because we've got Q, like, you know, saying, well, I'm God. And Picard's like, you're not God. And he's like, well, check your heart rate. And then Picard, like, puts his fingers up to his neck and he's like, no pulse. And so, what a surprise. And then Q's like, well, why would I go to all this trouble when I could just kill you anytime? This is, you're dead. You know, he's trying to convince him. And I thought that was really cute. I would have kept that
yes.
in.
Yes. But I'm thinking, like, never trust Q.
Mm-hmm.
How easy would it be for Q to, when Picard's checking his pulse, to make it so he doesn't feel anything anyway?
Yeah.
Do you mean Q could do anything? So just never trust what you see, what you hear from a Q ever. I'm going to keep it in just purely because it's John DeLancey and Patrick Stewart on screen.
Yeah.
They're both really good actors and there's a really good chemistry between them. And the way John DeLancey plays Q is just so irritating.
Yes.
And Patrick Stewart is just, as Jean-Luc Picard, is just so calm and
straightforward
and by the book and measured.
And,
yes, exactly. So I really like that between them. So we're keeping,
we need to keep
it. It's kind
that.
Of funny.
Yeah.
We already knew that Q, because it's in the episode anyway, that Q says he's God.
Mm-hmm.
He's just toying with Picard at this point.
Yeah.
But it's this other wee bit about checking your heart rate.
Yeah, it just adds a little bit of levity to it. It's humorous.
True. And is that the way they do it in the future still? Put your fingers to your neck. Don't they check their Apple Watch?
Yeah,
that's
right.
What I would do. Use the technology that's available to you. The next scene is scene 26, which is a conversation between Picard and Marta. And it's the morning after their liaison, shall we call it. Everything's different between them now and not in a good way. So we learn, I think, from this that apparently 1 in 3 Starfleet Academy cadets wash out because at the opening ceremony for their year at the academy, the admiral who's in charge says, look to the left, look to the right, then one of you will not make it.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that meant that not that they're going to die, but one of them won't make it through the 4 years or however long they're in the academy for.
Yeah, what do you think? Would you keep it?
Do you know what? I don't want to keep it. It was an interesting insight into Picard's initial days at the academy, but I have a really hard time envisaging a young Picard being so confident and cocky and not the Picard that we know that has served in Starfleet so long, the diplomat, somebody that's so measured and thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see this young French guy being really kind of brash. I have trouble imagining that, so I'll kind of take it out for that reason. Possibly delete it. I don't think it adds anything to the episode.
Yeah, I'm on the fence because I think this deleted scene tells us more about Marta because she was like, you know, I looked and I knew right then that I wanted you as a friend. And it sort of felt like that she, well, and she said she felt like she was the one that wasn't going to make it. And so I don't like that, again, a female not making it in a STEM world. So I almost want to delete it for that reason because of her hesitation and her lack of confidence. But yet it says so much about who she is and what she had to overcome to remain in the academy and to, you know, get as far as she did in Starfleet. So I'm on the fence with this one.
I think for what you just said there about her being a female, kind of automatically thinking that she wasn't going to make it or she wasn't good enough in some way, then we delete it for that reason because it lessens her role in the episode, I think. So yeah, we'll agree to delete that.
Okay.
And then the last scene from Tapestry, I can't even talk about this because I'm deleting it.
Okay.
Could you tell the listeners about this scene?
Yeah, 54? So we have Lieutenant Junior Grade Picard visits engineering and he is trying to be more assertive and wants to help Geordi with, I forgot to write down what it was, but Geordi was trying to fix something and Picard's like, well, have you tried this? And Geordi is again, just very dismissive. Yeah, I've tried it. You need to go back to astrometrics and, you know, and just is so dismissive of Picard, but it shows that he's trying to be more assertive and to, you know, build up his career to what he knows he can be with this, you know, second go around. I think we get enough of it in the episode that we don't need to have this scene.
The episode is cringeworthy enough having to watch the amazing Jean-Luc Picard be so... I want to say that he's kind of low down. He's a lesser form of life in some way, but he's not. He's still a lieutenant on the Federation's flagship.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So he's done really well to get there and he's working in astrophysics. So that's really cool in itself. But just the way Geordi speaks to him. And then directly after that, we see the proper part of the episode where he goes to 10 forward to speak to Riker and Troy and have that really uncomfortable conversation.
Yeah.
Where you've just never been committed and you're just not really cut out for anything because he says he wants to go on the command track. And I'm like, I can't watch it. It's too
much. Yeah, I think this scene extends that awkwardness and it's almost like Picard is groveling, you know, that he wants to do so much more, but everyone doesn't see that in him. So I'm fine to delete it because we get that with his conversation with Troy and Riker in 10 forward.
Yeah, exactly. Good. I'm glad we're deleting those last couple of bits. Let's move on from Tapestry and talk about episode 17, which was Birthright Part 2. Amy, what was happening in this scene 21?
So this was interesting to watch so recently because we had discussed Birthright with our good friend Pierre LaRocco a couple episodes ago. And so this one, we have the mystery of Worf's disappearance continues to worry his friends, but even more puzzling is the fate of Moog, his father. So I found this deleted scene. I want to keep it because Troy's in it. But Picard leans over, you know, because Worf has missed his where they were going to pick him up. And so Picard goes to Counselor Troy and like asks, you know, well, what was Worf's mental state? Did he believe that his father was alive? Does he wish that his father was alive? And so we get this added insight as to Troy's true counseling and how she has tried to help Worf, but then also gives an insight, you know, that really Worf does hope to find his father. And I think that that's important because it adds another layer of complexity to Worf's desire and like his original mission to go out and find his father.
Yeah, because as far as we know, just watching the episode, Worf wants his father to be dead. So he had an honourable death fighting the Romulans at Kittimer. All we ever really know about Moog is through Worf's telling. And so it's probably quite an idealised version of who his father is. And so I'm thinking about the question Picard asks. I think the answer is no. I can't remember the question now.
Well, he asks like, you know, does he believe that his father is dead? Does he want to find his father? Like those questions.
Yeah. Okay. I got you. Yeah. I've written in my notes, no is the answer. what is the question? Yeah. So as far as we know from Worf, Moog will not want to be found if he is still alive because of the dishonor and the disgrace that will bring to him surviving 20 years in this as a prisoner, essentially.
Yeah. But deep down, still sort of wishing to find him and see him. Yeah.
Although I suppose Moog, as he gets older, if he is still alive, then this life that he will have lived that we don't know anything about yet might have softened him and age might have lessened his Klingon tendencies. So might have just not given up, but been okay with his lot in life, having survived this attack. The next scene is scene 23, just after the previous one. Worf's escape attempt has failed, and Tokath is beginning to realise that he may no longer be able to preserve the sanctuary. So I think here we learn that the Romulans are still in contact with the rest of the Empire. They've increased the border scouts, and they're looking for the Iridian ship, and they're going to increase patrols in the camp in case more people come to visit, that they can be dissuaded from doing so.
Yeah, this scene is, it's more of, I want to almost keep it because we sort of get the feel that the sanctuary is now in danger because the Iridian ship has now escaped and now people are going to be coming to find them and that there's the knowledge that they exist is out there with the Iridian ship. But yeah. We sort of get that feeling throughout the whole episode. So I'm sort of on the fence about it.
Out of all the deleted scenes in this episode, of which there are quite a few, this is one that I would delete because if I were to rank them in order, this would be the one I would delete the most, I think.
Yeah.
There's other more deserving scenes that I would keep in.
Yeah, agreed.
Cool. Scene 32, what's happening here, Amy?
So Worf is sharing this proud tradition of Klingon mythology with the captains, and he's telling the story to the young ones around the campfire. And he's saying that Kalis walked into the sea to get his knife and he held his breath for 5 days and five nights. And then the young one's like, well, that's impossible. And, you know, but I like adding this mythology to Kalis and I would definitely keep it. And again, just this over the top, you know, 5 days and five nights under the water, you know, and I would just keep it.
Under the water, which was part of the ocean that was created by tears, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think he mentions that as well. Somebody cried for so long, like they filled up an ocean. I really like mythology. Humans are just full of ancient myths and legends that are so far-fetched. The story, Aesop's Fables, the story of the mouse that pulled the thorn out of the lion's paw. Or there's Jesus feeding 5,000 people with 5 loaves and 2 fishes, or was it 2 loaves and 5 fishes?
Yeah.
Anyway, there was hardly any bread and hardly any fish, but he managed to feed like hundreds of people.
Yeah, when I heard the 5 days and 5 nights, I was like, oh, you know, Jesus fasted for 40 days and 40 nights, you know, that's what
exactly.
Popped into
yeah, it's
my
going
mind.
To be pretty hungry.
Yes.
By the end of that. Yeah, and like all the Greek mythology, like the story of Sisyphus, try to roll the rock up the hill, but never, the higher he gets, the more difficult it gets, and never quite gets to the top. Mm-hmm. I think that's his version of hell.
Yeah.
He can't escape the afterlife. Mm-hmm. And Pandora's box, that idea, she couldn't resist it and she opened it.
Yeah.
And all the evil and hatred flew out. And yeah. Yeah, and the only thing that was left in the box was hope. So there's like cultures across the world are really rich with these stories. None of them are believable anyway. They're just nice stories with an interesting point, or maybe some
moral
kind of
teaching
story, point behind yeah. them. Yeah, so I'm keeping
yes,
this.
Yes, we're
definitely.
Keeping that one.
Scene 40, Giral tells Worf the story of how she gave up grieving of her past life and gave in to the need for companionship, taking Tokath, the Romulan guy, as her husband. I really want to keep this, Amy.
Oh, me too. This is a powerful scene.
Yes. She left a 5-year-old son on the Klingon homeworld, yeah. and she spent years grieving for this child that she would never get to see.
Yeah, 3 years.
And I'm like, how does a mother, was it 3 years? Mm-hmm. How does a mother do that?
Yeah.
I know it's a Klingon mother, and they probably like
grieve forever.
Or grieve less because they're hard warrior-like. But yeah, I don't know how she did that.
Yeah, and I really like it because Worf is, again, very judgmental. And it's like, you mm-hmm. went, you took up with a Romulan, but she is so passionate about what she did was best for her and her family, you know, and she's like, who are you to judge? And, you know, and Worf finally is like, well, I can understand and I can almost respect your sacrifice that happened at Kittimer, but how could you take him for a mate? And she just goes on and, you know, and she explains, I had to give up this hatred and loneliness. I mm-hmm. gave that up and chose to have this beautiful, wonderful life. And I think that that is very important and definitely needs to be kept in this story.
Yeah. No, you're right saying Worf is really judgmental. He's kind of racist almost, isn't he,
oh,
towards
yeah.
Romulans? I know he's got this experience, a bit like O'Brien is towards the Cardassians because of the way
right.
they treated prisoners during the war, Federation Cardassian War. But Worf's a bit like that. He's really jaded towards the Romulans mm-hmm. because of his previous experience and can't see anything good about them.
Yeah.
But she really drives it home that, no, she is happy here and these are her experiences. Mm-hmm.
And that it was
her
choice.
Her case well.
You know?
Exactly, yeah. Because yeah. I think when we spoke to Pierre discussing this episode, I think it was maybe me that mentioned that there was a bit of Stockholm Syndrome.
Right, yeah.
That they learned to love their captors. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily think that's the case anymore.
Yeah, not after seeing this deleted scene. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Stockholm Syndrome is maybe where your mind gives up in such a way that for you to survive in any sense, you develop feelings for your captors. Mm-hmm. But the way she puts it,
like she's
she made this conscious
to create
yes.
a life. Yeah.
Exactly. And she does that and she's quite happy mm-hmm. with it. So another interesting take. Okay, so we're going to move on. Another few scenes to go in this episode, scene 45, where Worf tells Tok more of the legend of Kaelas.
So this is the one where they're going out for the hunt and they're in the jungle, mm-hmm. you know, and so Worf is telling Tok of this, you know, more of the legend where Kaelas was captured. And before he was going to be executed, he asked his captors, well, let me say goodbye to the moon and the stars. And Tok's like, well, he could have escaped. He could have saved himself. And why would they allow him to go out for one last evening? And Worf, I think the moral of the story is like, well, he gave his word and that he would return. So that is good enough. And then he was killed. So I sort of like that because we're getting more of the Kaelas story. And again, the moral of when a Klingon gives his word, he will honor it.
Because it's all about Klingon honor. I wrote that it didn't really add anything. It was just more Klingon lore. But I think you've explained it quite well that it deepens our knowledge of Kaelas and why Worf should be allowed to go out on this hunt. But one question is, when did Worf become such a great hunter? Obviously, his knowledge about being Klingon just comes from whatever he's read in like the Federation archives. So when did he ever hone this skill? Yeah, I know he grew up in Russia, or whatever Russia will be, with his Russian parents. And we know Vladimir Putin's a hunter. He likes to hunt shirtless on horseback, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But I don't think reading a book necessarily makes me a great hunter.
You know, it's interesting, and we'll talk about rightful heir because this episode is also in season 6. And when Worf is talking to Kalis, and I know we're giving it away, we'll come back to it. But, you know, Kalis is like, well, you have a son. Where's your son? And Worf is like, well, I'm teaching him the ways. But going back to Birthright, it's like, yeah, he knows the Klingon rituals and stories because he's read them, but has he practiced them? So you do make a good point, because we know Worf, I mean, outside of the holodeck, I mean, maybe he has done holodeck practices of the hunt.
We've seen him play with Bat'leth.
Yeah, but as far as experiential knowledge, I think you're right. He definitely knows the book knowledge of the mm-hmm. history of Klingon, but the experience we have seen previously, like Guinan's like, oh, I know Klingons that laugh and you don't laugh. It's because he doesn't mm-hmm. have that experiential knowledge.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Okay. So this next one is, we're nearly there, listeners, stay with us. This is scene 3 to go in Birthright. Scene 49, where Tokath is a deeply compassionate man who sacrificed his military career to avoid unnecessary bloodshed. Worf seems determined to make the man put him to death. There's something that, is it, I can't remember who says it, it's either Tokath or Worf. Without tradition, we have no identity, we have no pride. And I'm not sure if I agree with that. And then it took me think about traditions that I have. Like, we still do like a family Easter Sunday dinner. None of us are religious in any way. Yes, we were brought up religious, but none of us have any religious affiliation anymore. But we still do this because it's a nice kind of a family tradition. We still put up a Christmas tree for the same reason, because it's kind of pretty and decorative. And yeah, so we have all these little family traditions. When Worf said that, I think it was Worf, made me think about all the wee things that I do. But I don't think as a culture, traditions are necessarily important. Like, personal traditions might be.
But I think that's what builds culture.
Mm.
And so let me tell you a quick story, and I'll try and get through it because I know this is going to be a long episode. Sorry, listeners. But you brought up Easter, and it was the craziest thing. A girlfriend of mine called me up, and I haven't spoken to her in like 3 years. And she was telling me that she told about our family's Easter tradition to her friends because she just adopted it as her tradition. So we get these with my family. We have these, I think they're the Cadbury eggs, but they're the color eggs. And when you lick them, the color runs off. And so you put them on your lips, sort of like lipstick. And so we paint our lips with these eggs, and the, you know, yellow, pink, blue. Blue is the best one, listeners, if you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we take pictures. And it's just sort of this fun thing that all the girls do at Easter time. And it was so interesting to learn that my friend, who had spent so many Easters, because she was my roommate and stuff like that, she spent so many Easters with me and my family that she adopted that culture as hers and was passing on that tradition to her kids and telling that to her friends. And I thought, man, that she really is building that culture, and how important that history and the stories are to relive the memories and the feeling of bonding mm-hmm. and being together. And so for that, I think that understanding of the importance of stories and really builds, and I think we need to keep this scene.
Okay, I agree with you. So I'm going to have to think up on this more about tradition being important.
Another story. Just, okay. I have a lot of family traditions, and one of them, on my mother's side, the 4th of July parade, we would always go to Centerville, Utah, and watch the parade in Centerville. But that smaller family tradition builds up the entire nation's tradition of 4th of July celebrations and culture. But on a micro level, we were celebrating that and the macro. So it sort of combined to both. So like, my love of 4th of July is not because of America per se, it's because of my family traditions that support.
Okay, I get you. I think we have to move on. Yes. Although I am going to the shops like immediately to buy some Cadbury's mini eggs.
Yes, yeah, that's those mini eggs, yep.
Paint my lips and send you pictures. Okay, we're still nearly there. Scene 51. Amy, what's happening here?
Okay, so Tolkoth is, this is where he's going to have Worf executed. And I think we need to keep this scene in because we really see Tolkoth like rallying the troops and building this common sacrifices that everyone has had to do to get to build this sanctuary, and that Worf is going to destroy it all. And so we really get Tolkoth in this beautiful speech of, you know, you lost your son and we built this community. I didn't write down exactly, but it was very rallying the troops of getting his support. And he's like, I don't want to do this, but this is necessary to keep our sanctuary.
Yes. It's all those little examples of community that he lists.
Yes.
There was one that was really notable. I stood beside you at your wedding.
Oh, yeah.
And then years later, when your wife fell ill and died, I was with you and we cried together.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, okay, so this is seems to be less of a case of captor and captive and more of a case of a village with where everybody's friends.
And, yeah, and building, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, I'm going to agree to keep it. So Tolkoth and Giral really sell this
their home, yeah.
This village, yeah. Which maybe that's why they were deleted. Because we wanted to side with Worf.
But I don't know, because at the end, when they allowed some of their youth to leave, you know, and then Worf's like, you can never speak of this place to honor. And I think when we hear and see these deleted scenes, what Tolkoth and Giral has built, like, that's really, truly honoring, because what they did was so pure and right for their time. Yeah,
that's true. Okay, so we're keeping that in.
Yeah.
Scene 55 is the last one.
Yeah, we're throwing this one out.
We're throwing this one out because apparently the Enterprise has the ability to receive text messages.
Yes. It's text only.
Yeah, through its little SIM card. And then there's another bit where the text message says that Worf's on board a Romulan supply ship.
Yeah.
And then it goes to them meeting this Romulan supply ship.
A captain's
log. And it said the Derridex class warbird.
Yeah, that wasn't a supply ship.
It's not a supply ship. Yeah. No. It's like a big, that's a warship. Seriously. Yeah. That brings us to the end of Birthright. A lot to keep in, because it adds depth to the story, but a lot, like, we're just going to throw away because it was kind of pointless. Yeah. We shall move on to episode 20, which, again, is one of my favourite Star Trek episodes because it's really adventurous, and that is The Chase.
Yeah.
Amy, what's happening in scene 36B?
So we have Beverly Crusher who is trying, we're gathering samples for all the different DNAs, if you remember The Chase. And so this is where we have Mott, the ship's barber, is offering his DNA. And we must keep this in because it just adds this humor. And he's like, Mott is like, is it going to hurt? And then Beverly's like, not as much as that pedicure you gave me last week. Oh my gosh. That humor was so cute. And to see their interaction, it really reminded me of the Orville and just sort of the light humor that gets interjected just on very slight, but yet so important to show the relationship. And we don't see enough of Mott, so I'm keeping it in.
I think we keep it in, but it's just a weird little scene, isn't it?
Yeah.
For a few reasons, like, I don't believe that sickbay wouldn't have a record of the DNA, like, of different species that were in the Federation.
Well, I know that they have, like, their transporters, but I don't know if that's specific DNA. That's just their pattern, you know?
I know, but I wasn't really buying that. Okay. I think there was something, having to get all 1,000 and something people in, kind of one at a time, kind of, or, like, even just single members of different species. There must be something like, I don't want to say, 50 different species serving aboard the Enterprise. Yeah, I did like that humour, the bit about the pedicure.
Yeah.
And then he walks away saying, oh, nobody ever listens to me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, just a poor wee lost soul. But now we know that he does pedicures, so it's a full service barbershop.
And that Beverly gets him, so that's good to know.
Exactly. She'll have well, a pedicure is your feet, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm. Don't like feet. No.
That's why you have someone else touch him.
No. Nobody's touching my feet.
Oh my gosh. Oh. I need a pedicure so bad. This quarantine's, yeah, that's all I'm going to say.
When you walk, do your nails like...
They're clicking now.
On the floor?
No, they're not.
But okay, we're going to move on to our last episode, which is Rightful Heir, another Klingon heavy episode. This is episode 23 of the season, and there are a bunch of deleted scenes. There are seven. We will get through them as quickly as possible. Amy, what's happening in scenes 6 and 7?
So for this scene, it's Riker is talking to Picard about Worf's sloppy performance because he seems distracted. He's behind on reports. And it just sort of adds to how Worf usually isn't. So I'm not sure if I would keep this because Riker's like, well, this isn't the first time that Worf has done this. And I'm like, hold on. This is Worf we're talking about. Don't be saying this is normal behavior. So just from that one little thing, I would have deleted. If he would have said, recently Worf has been distracted, but he sort of made it sound like Worf is a sloppy officer in general. And I didn't like that.
Yes. Riker says he got dressed and reported for duty as if nothing happened.
Yeah.
So it implies that something relatively big happened to do with Worf. And then it prompted Riker to go take it to Picard. And I was like, oh, what did Worf do? And we never really learn. And then it goes into the scene where Picard goes to Worf's quarters.
Yeah. On your feet, officer.
Picard is not happy.
Mm-mm. Would you keep it?
Yeah, I'm thinking deleting it.
Yeah, I think it needs to be deleted.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
We know Worf is off kilter by now.
Yes, exactly. So a little bit later in scene 25, Worf wants desperately to believe that this man is really Kahless, and the newcomer says all the right things.
He does.
It's just a conversation. It's just a conversation between Worf and Kahless, one of many that are in the episode already.
But I think I like it because Kahless is like, I came to you in a dream and said that you would do something unique, and then Worf is like, yeah, I serve in Starfleet where no other Klingon has done this before. So I think we need that.
But did we not already know that Worf had a vision of Kahless when he was younger?
Well, that
in the
is
caves.
True.
I don't know. I'm going back to that way I used to be where it was just Klingons talking and I was like, really had to focus to listen. Because it's just a lot of talk and it's like, oh, we are Klingons. So I kind of struggled. So for that reason, I want to kind of delete it, I think.
Yeah, I do think we get... Yeah, I would keep it because I'm not sure that we really do get that. But Kahless is definitely selling it here.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. In scene 27, Picard briefs Data Troy and Riker on Kahless' existence, much to their surprise. So this is a scene in the briefing room and they're all just standing around chatting.
Yeah. And Riker's like, well, this can't be Kahless. Kahless has been dead for 1,000 years. And then Data says 1,547 years to be exact. So we get a 47 reference. So I'm going to keep it in just for that.
Okay. I'm keeping it in. I've totally missed that, but good pick there. I was deleting it before that.
I mean, we really could delete it because we learned nothing new, but we do get the exact timeline of 1,547. Okay. So for the trivia, we would keep it in.
Trivia for the fan service, keep it for the 47. Okay. Scene 37, Amy.
Yeah. So this was sort of what I mentioned before, because Worf is talking to Kahless and how it's like living among humans. What I found so interesting with this deleted scene is that Worf refers to us humans as aliens. And that was so surprising to me. And Worf says, these aliens allow me to perform, you know, all the Klingon rituals. And so I can do all of these things and I can keep up my Klingon-ness, you know. And Kahless is like, well, where's your son? And again, this was interesting as well, where Worf is not exactly truthful. He says, well, he is visiting his parents. I'm like, come on, Worf. He is not visiting, you know?
Yeah,
he is living.
Shipped him off.
Yeah, you shipped him off, you know? So I And then Kalis is like, well, how is he going to learn about the Klingon rituals? And Worf is like, well, I'm instructing him. I'm like, and Kalis sort of calls him out. He's like, you know, well, living with aliens, and he's like, this is a nice sword, but living with aliens could dull your sword, you know, and your knowledge and experience of Klingons. And so I'm torn because I think Worf lies and he calls these humans, his friends, his family, he calls us aliens, which I didn't appreciate, but we get a lot of information.
Do you think he maybe does that for Kalis's benefit?
Yes. He's trying to show off.
No, but in terms of calling them aliens, because Kalis wouldn't necessarily know what a human is. I mean, it's just another alien.
Yeah.
Because we don't know when the Klingon race became spacefaring and made first contact with anybody else. It might have been before.
Yeah.
We're assuming it was before Kalis's time. So yeah, you're right. We do learn quite a lot in this.
We do.
But
I think we got to keep it. It's okay, a good scene.
Your call. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's keep it then. Nice. See, directly after this, we've got scene 38. Gowron summons the Enterprise to a rendezvous way outside Klingon space. And it's just a conversation between Riker and Data on the bridge. There's nothing to it.
Yeah.
Basically, they receive word from Gowron, come here now.
Yeah. I didn't even write any notes, so we do not need to keep this.
Okay, that's fine. Jumping about to scenes 47 and 48, as Worf and Kalis share a drink, they discuss life, death, and Stovall Corr. Amy, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I think we need to keep this one because it's sort of, we understand Kalis a little bit more, and it inches us just a little bit closer to the fact that he's a clone, because he describes, well, they're sharing this taste of Wornog, and Worf is like, well, the replicators can't do it justice. And then Kalis sort of like, well, it's been so long, I can't remember, so it tastes okay. Like Kalis is trying to cover up something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Worf asks him about death in Stovall Corr. And so then we get the explanation that Kalis says, well, I'm in this form right now, so I don't remember my past form. And so he's, obviously, again, sort of covering, but I almost believe him because, I mean, I don't know. If we're dead, do we remember our life? Or if we come back from the dead, do we remember our death? I don't know. So it seems plausible that what Kalis is saying is true.
That's true. We definitely see that Worf has drunk the Kalis Kool-Aid, hasn't he? Here, he's all in. He's totally believing this guy. But as the viewer, we are seeing all these little chinks in Kalis's story. Even though we don't necessarily know at this point that they are chinks.
Right.
It's only with hindsight that we see that, or he doesn't remember what Stovall Corr was like, and he can't remember the taste of Wornog. I wonder if that's like eggnog.
I know. I was sort of wondering what that was. Was it a milky, you know, thick consistency or?
Made of warthog or something. I don't know. Interesting.
Anything that ends in OG.
Yeah. Okay. So I think we're keeping that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's keep it. Okay. Last scene, listeners, you'll be glad to hear. And then we'll get this episode wrapped up so you can stop listening to Amy and I drone on. Scene 59. Amy, what's happening here?
So this one we have Gowron and Koroth, and they're basically deciding whether the Enterprise is going to be the one to deliver Kalis to the Klingon homeworld. Mm-hmm. That was sort of the scene, because everything else, like you said, when you're watching it, they show what is in the episode, then it, you know, fades to the deleted scene, and then it picks back up. I did not feel that we needed this deleted scene because it gets covered in the regular episode.
I think so too. And what really drew me out of the episode was that Koroth said Klingon.
I heard that too. And I'm like, Klingon?
And I was like, what even is that?
Yeah.
It's like that episode where in Deep Space Nine, where Jadzia goes back to the Trill homeworld because there's something wrong with her. There's, remember, she discovers that she's got another suppressed life in her doctor.
Yes.
Was she the head of the Trill Symbiosis Commission, I want to say?
Yeah.
Who dealt with the Dax symbiont. calls her Jadzia as opposed to Jadzia.
Ah.
And every time it's just not Jadzia. It's like calling you Amway.
Right. They put the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
The emphasis. Never heard that before. That sounds like a thing. Syllable. I think we should do a whole episode where we put the wrong emphasis on everything.
Oh my gosh, that would be so funny.
I don't know if people would enjoy that. Okay, so we're deleting that basically because he called the Klingons Klingons.
Yeah.
Listeners, you made it. You stuck with us unless you switched us off and deleted that episode. That's fine. You can do that. Amy, that was a lot of fun, wasn't it? We deleted a good few scenes. We kept a few scenes in. We will compile that list and write to Paramount and Viacom and CBS and insist that it get digitally remastered and put back in the episode, or there will be hell to pay.
So it was interesting, as you put in your notes, you know, going through the deleted scenes that are on the Blu-ray set that came out.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also deleted scenes from Chain of Command Part 1 and Part 2 that is not on the set, but you have to buy the standalone Blu-ray release of Chain of Command. So again, spend more money. And if you do, then you will get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You would get 9 deleted scenes for Chain of Command Part 1 and Part 2. I do not own just that standalone.
Do you know what? While I love my Star Trek, I'm not a cash cow for CBS, so.
Yeah. So listeners, let us know if you own that and have seen those deleted scenes for Chain of Command Part 1 and Part 2. I think it would be interesting because that is an amazing episode. But as far as what got deleted for Season 6, man, there were a lot. And I think our ratio is about, we're keeping about 90% of them. There's only a few that we deleted.
Yeah, very few.
And that they add to the episode.
Exactly. And the ones that were deleted were pretty much little snippets of like less than 10 seconds of footage that we felt didn't really add anything.
And that's covered in the regular episode. So.
Exactly.
And they need to quit deleting Troy scenes, period. That's my final thought.
Yes, I think TNG is maybe finished filming for a while. So I think we're okay. I think we're safe. Amy, we have a preview of what's coming up next week.
Super
special episode.
Listeners, we are going to have an epic crossover with Zach, Liam, and Suzanne from To The Journey. We are going to continue our fan collection set, and we are going to cover the Borg. So on Tuesday...
Are they from Sweden?
They are. Your neighbors.
Yeah.
So we are going to cover the Borg episodes from TNG, obviously on Earl Grey. And then Wednesday, you'll want to listen to The Journey to have us discuss the Borg episodes on Voyager. So we're really looking forward to that.
Yes, I can't wait. Although this has been really hell to organize because we are entirely around the world.
And we started trying to organize this last year. We did.
So, yeah, that's going to be good fun. Well, it's been so much fun talking about Season 6 deleted scenes today, but that isn't the only thing we've been discussing here on the network. Here is what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
But of all the Section 31 that we're getting in New Trek, this feels the most legitimate. This feels like the Section 31 that we know from Deep Space Nine, and it doesn't feel like, oh, we're just going back to the well again, because, you know, even Iris said, you know, I know they've used it in the movies, but we created this.
Earl Grey.
Still no clue. I'm going to kick myself when I get it.
Yeah, tell us, Jim.
Kirsten Dunst.
Gosh, of course.
I hate the universe. Kirsten.
Gosh, I knew that. What's wrong with us?
The best Loxana performance in all 7 seasons, in my opinion.
Literary Treks.
if this were an episode of Voyager, and I actually think this book would make an interesting episode of Voyager, and like we kind of hinted at, maybe it's very much like an episode of Voyager that we'll talk about. I don't think it would have been called Seven of Nine, right?
No. No, it would have to have like a one-word title to fit in with most of the other Voyager episodes, so you can't really remember which one it's about.
Yeah, it would just be called Seven. That's what it would be.
To the journey!
She did actually mean what she said in the back in the space just before they die. I don't know, I just kind of like it. It's just
I'm
going to
tell you I love you just before I die. Not a minute sooner.
It's like, at least I don't have to deal with the ramifications if I'm dead. Well, that backfired.
Or maybe she was just like, at least I don't have to hear him not say it if we're going to die.
So what you're saying is next time that we ask someone to marry them, or anyone who asks someone to marry them, they should do it on death's door of like some kind of crazy adventure, like jumping off a bungee jump.
You're in the middle of being eaten by a shark or something.
I love you, gobble, gobble, gobble.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop Apple Podcasts app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, and most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
Do you want a bonus question?
Oh, yeah, I was trying to think of a bonus question there, and I was like, oh, I don't have anything. So, yes, I'm so glad you have one.
Please. Okay, so for our seasons of STLV, we have three that we have attended together. Seasons
indeed.
One, two, and three. So out yes. of those three seasons, what would be a deleted scene?
Oh, and would I put it back in or not? Would be a deleted scene? That's a good question. Do you know what? I was thinking before you asked the question, and I was thinking you were going to go with what was your like favourite thing you would never delete? Oh. And it was the time that you took Ewan and I to, I can't even remember the name of it, the old strip.
Oh, Fremont Street.
Fremont Street, and that was literally the most fun I've ever had in my life.
So we would definitely Street, not delete that.
Definitely never getting deleted, yes. Okay. So that was so much fun. And you gave me into trouble for buying chewing gum. But it was great. I loved it. Okay, so what would I delete? The mornings. The hangover in the morning because we've stayed up too late. And then you make me get up, like we go to bed at like 4, and then you make me get up at like 7:30 to record a podcast. And I'm like, Amy, please, I need sensory deprivation when I'm hungover.
Oh my gosh, yes, I remember
you're
that.
Me get up. Yeah, that's about it. What about you?
Well, I'm going to come at it with a little twist. I would delete it only because it is so special that I only want a few people to remember that, not the general public. So the deleted scene would be something more special. And that would be the time when Ewan and I stayed up all night. All night, listeners. We did not sleep at all. And I would put that in the deleted scenes just because I want to cherish that with just a few people. That was
I'm still disgusted about that episode. I was very sensible that evening and
you
went to
were.
Bed nice and early. And do you know what? See, even at home when Ewan's on a night out with like for work or with his friends. Sometimes I'll wake up like 1, 2, 3 and he won't be in. And I'll wake up with a fright and I'll be worried and then I'll check for him on Find My Friends. And there's been a glitch in the phone. It looks like he's in the river or out at sea or something. I was like, oh no, what's happened to him? And then he always turns up. So Amy and Ewan did go out one night, then stayed up so late they went for breakfast.
We did.
The next morning.
We saw people on the way to the gym.
They basically went outside like at 5 a.m., I assume.
We saw the sunrise.
I was snug as a bug in a rug.
Yeah.
Did you not count crickets out in the wee garden outside the Rio or something?
We did everything.
Do you even remember what you did that night, Amy?
Oh my gosh.
You should be ashamed of yourself. Yes, I would delete that for other reasons.
But you knew he was safe because he was with me.
That's no guarantee of safety, is it? I suppose. Anyways, good question.
Well, we would love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us, and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Amy, where can people contact you when you're not deciding whether or not to only take Ewan or me to STLV? You can pick one.
That is Sophie's choice right there.
Mm-hmm.
And when I am choosing both, you can find me over on United Federation of Podcasts, where I host All Good Things with Patrick Devlin. We get to talk about all of Star Trek. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, and you can find me right there in the Babel Conference. So, Joe, where can people contact you when Q isn't making you find your pulse to see if you're alive?
Do you know what? I'm like over this Q stuff. Like, I would see through his wily guises, and yeah, he wouldn't beat me. But when I'm not doing that, you can get me on Twitter at JoeyJo. No, you can tweet me on the Twitter at JoeyJo77UK. You can email me, joepodcasts@gmail.com. And you can get me lurking about the Babel Conference. And I've got a little bit better about replying to messages.
Yeah, you're doing much better.
I'm all right.
Yeah.
Maybe sent a wee tweet or two as well, so that's good. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host and distribute these shows each month. We'd really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers. They are Norman Lau, Michael Huter, Thomas Appel, Chris Tribuzio, Jim McMahon, Justin Ozer, and Joe Keegan. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially Earl Grey.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Great joy and gratitude.
I'd like to introduce you to Henry. Don't ask.